Welcome to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock, and I'll tell you why. We just got another sign that Tom Brady's age is starting to catch up to him.
Come on. And I'm Colin Cowherd, and I'll tell you why I expect a big night for Lamar Jackson in tonight's Hall of Fame game. Speak for yourself starts now. I think it's going to be really...
Going out on a limb.
I think he's going to be a compelling player tonight.
RG3, I'm betting on. All right, hello and welcome. We're joined today by former NFL head coach Eric Mangini and Fox College football reporter Bruce Feldman. Let's start in college football, where Ohio State placed Urban Meyer on paid administrative leave yesterday after a report alleged the coach had lied about how much he knew about former assistant Jack Smith's history of domestic violence before Smith was finally fired last week. Meyer didn't fight the school's decision, releasing a statement that read, quote, Ohio State AD Gene Smith and I agree that being on leave during this inquiry will facilitate its completion. This allows the team to conduct training camp with minimal distraction. I eagerly look forward to the resolution of this matter. All right, Cowherd, should Urban Meyer step down?
Yesterday I leaned no. Today I think I lean yes. You're asking me to believe unbelievable things. That his wife clearly knew that 3 years ago about the violence, and they didn't talk, they didn't discuss it. You're asking me to believe that a guy that's a control freak, and you asked me to believe this with Art Briles and Rick Pitino and Joe Paterno, that he doesn't know what's going on in his staff, with his coaches, a guy that he brought from Florida to Ohio State. You know, if you had an alibi, you know, I was here and this action happened here. You're asking me to believe a coach who is smart, who has control, who has a great relationship he's bragged about with his wife, that they suddenly just didn't communicate about this very ugly, violent episode. It's too many things I can't buy into.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I'll add in addition, I just think Ohio State's brand is so big that I don't think he can survive. He didn't build the Ohio State football brand. That was already built long before he got there. And so I think if I'm Ohio State, I'm just like, I don't know if I can deal with Urban Meyer's baggage. When he was at Florida, I think 30-some-odd players were arrested. He coached Aaron Hernandez. I just think the baggage of that, his reputation of being a bit shady, is going to be too much for Ohio State to handle, and it's probably best for him to move on because Ohio State's not going to have the Jerry Tarkanian of football. That's something you do at a UNLV or some school where Jerry Tarkanian built the program from scratch. Again, Ohio State's going to be Ohio State. They'll find their next Urban Meyer.
They've won with eight different coaches.
Can I introduce one thing, though, here? So he's in serious legal jeopardy because of the Title IX issues. If he did not report to the Title IX office, if in fact he did know, which I agree with Colin, I think it's such a stretch to think he wouldn't know, especially when he was the one at Big Ten Media Days 2 weeks ago when he was talking about the Florida incident in 2009 involving Zach Smith. He brought up how he and Shelly kind of counseled this couple, this young couple. So why would we think that if Shelly Meyer is getting these texts, she wouldn't go back to Urban Meyer and tell him? Also, why would she not have told Urban Meyer before he went and does this big press conference of the guy he fired about these details? So the only way I think he survives this is if there is some kind of documented proof that he did alert either Gene Smith, his boss, the AD there, or the Title IX office, and at least showed he handled protocol correctly. If he did that, then it's a different situation. Then they got to dig out of the part about bad PR and how he lied to the media. The other thing in this is, keep in mind, when you're talking about whether he should step down or not, if he gets fired for cause, he's going to lose $38 million. Now, I don't think people are just going to walk away from that kind of money. So how will he contest it? I'm not a lawyer. I have no idea. I also don't know. You know, we haven't heard from Urban Meyer whether he told his AD or not. There's a lot of stuff out there. We know the text messages. We know some context. We don't know everything he has done or what his boss and how they handled it.
And look, there's a lot of things we don't know. We haven't, this hasn't played out. And for him to step down at this point, I don't think it's fair. I do think people need to have an opportunity to go through due process. They need to have the opportunity to have all the different components of this put on the table before he just steps down. And the idea that he's Jerry Tarkanian, look, there were issues at Florida, and there haven't been many issues at Ohio State, I don't think. I'm in Ohio. I would hear about them, but it's a couple days old. Why don't we let this play out and see where everything falls?
The thing about stories like this, though, the longer we sit here and wait, rival coaches will feed media. Rival recruiters will feed media. These stories get uglier. And so this is a huge brand. I think you have to make a decision 48 hours. I mean, we're going to stretch this thing out for 4 weeks?
Well, I'm not sure I'm ever going to be for a rush to judgment. But my also issue is I don't think this is going to be decided on fairness. And so, Eric, I understand your point, but fairness is out the window when there's this much money at stake and a brand is that big. And so, again, my comments aren't about what's fair for Urban Meyer. It's about what the situation that Ohio State is in and their brand. And so let's say that there is some kind of magic bullet that somewhat exonerates Urban Meyer and gives them a fig leaf to cover themselves and they can keep Urban Meyer. That's not going to stop the horrible optics and the stain on Urban Meyer's reputation, where he will be painted as, whether we like it or not, moving forward, he's the Jerry Tarkanian of football. I just don't know if that's the brand Ohio State wants.
One of the things that's confusing to me, that Zach Smith was not considered an elite coach. He wasn't a top coordinator. He wasn't a good recruiter. In the coaching fraternity, he was an eye roll. He was a relative of Earl Bruce.
Grandson.
You're going to roll the dice? Like, there's loyalty, and then there's stupidity. I don't get, what was the win for Urban in the
Earl
deceit?
Earl Bruce was like his mentor and like a second father to him.
And you gave him a job at Florida, and he wasn't good, and you had to save his marriage. I don't understand the win
and
for Urban.
And you took him on as a walk-on when Urban Meyer was the first head coach at Bowling Green, first time, 17 years ago or whatever. He brought him in as a walk-on. So he did all that stuff for him. I'm with you. Now, he did have a reputation to be supposedly being a pretty good recruiter, but you're at Ohio State. Pretty much all four of us could recruit at Ohio State. No offense, the three of us could. You obviously are credentialed, but like you could take anybody off the street and we could probably recruit pretty well with that brand behind us. I think they have a better receiver coach now in Brian Hartline, who was on that staff, played in the NFL, has a level that he could sell to them to recruits. And I just think that part to me is a head scratcher. As we talked about, he gave a lot of second chances and third chances and fourth chances to shaky character guys at UF, but that was in the name of getting really good athletes on the field. This part was out of a loyalty to
I understand
to his mentor,
more than the
and it's just so much trouble for him.
But that's why I think there's more to this story, because he it probably isn't as clear cut as we think. He's not going to risk all that he has, all that he has built up for a wide receiver coach. If you just want to look at it from a business perspective, it's not like it was some elite offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, just purely from the business side of it. So that's what makes me think there's more that we're going to find out. In terms of the brand, again, business perspective, winning helps the brand. Winning helps the brand. So this issue will be put in the back burner if they win.
Eric, this
winning
is,
cleans everything.
You're not answering to a billionaire owner. You're answering to likely a liberal school president or chancellor. They feel like, and the arrogance of Ohio State, which is, I think is accurate, they're like, no, we can find someone to win. Maybe not, we won't maybe find the next Urban Meyer, but we can win. We've done that without Urban Meyer, without Woody Hayes. Earl Bruce won a little bit. Tressel obviously won a lot. They feel like at Ohio State they can find people to win. Let's quickly transition to Colin. I want your thoughts on this. Do you think, I believe, that Urban Meyer has a coaching career if this ends at Ohio State? I think he can be a head coach in the NFL.
So do I. I've always felt there's a handful of guys in college, a handful. I mean, Pete Carroll's worked, Jim Harbaugh worked. There are a handful of guys that were. Bobby Petrino could have won in the NFL. Nick Saban, if the doctor said you get Drew Brees, wins. I think Urban, listen, Belichick is tight with a handful of college coaches. I think, from my understanding, he really liked Urban. He respects Urban's opinion on personnel. Urban was a very creative, clever Alex Smith. That's when I first heard about Alex Smith. I think Urban's very respected in NFL circles. That's what I feel.
Look, Urban Meyer's a good guy to be friends with. He's got access to a ton of elite players, and he'll give you the information, the true information on those elite players. I mean, as a head coach, having a relationship with coaches like Urban Meyer, it really helps you as you're going through the draft process.
You think he has a coaching future?
I don't know if it's in the NFL as a head coach right off the bat, but yeah, I think he has a coaching future probably in college and maybe in some role in the NFL.
Here's just one thing I would keep in mind, though. Urban Meyer, to me, was not going to be Nick Saban or certainly Bill Snyder, where he was going to coach into his 60s and into his 70s. I mean, he's in his mid-50s now. I don't think he wants to coach into his 60s. If he was going to do it, I think it would have to be a short window because I wouldn't see him being here for that much longer.
Okay, but if I'm an NFL team, again, and he may have to forfeit $38 million, I know where I can get it back in the NFL as a head coach. I think a lot of people think that he's a motivator. I've been tracking this guy since he joined the Mid-American Conference at Bowling Green. As soon as he showed up, their offense was better. He goes out to Utah, their offense is better.
Day one.
He goes to Florida, their offense is better. Ohio State, with quarterbacks that aren't that much, they find a way to play offense. This guy helps a team win immediately with his offensive ingenuity.
In the NFL, though, you have a salary cap and you have a draft. You don't get to go recruit unlimited first-round draft picks. A little bit harder.
I'm not saying it's not hard, but he is creative. He's always been a creative thinker. And the other thing is, you know, maybe for a year or two, he's a consultant. Because of the damage to his brand, there may be NFL teams that are reticent to give him the title of head coach. But in the football community, people will call Urban Meyer.
I don't want to minimize the allegations here. But, again, we're not talking about Urban Meyer having done something to his wife. And we're talking about asking another grown man to manage another grown man's relationship. We're not talking about how he mismanaged kids. That is his direct responsibility and to some degree, responsibility to manage his assistant coaches. I don't think the stain of this, I think it hurts him terribly in college football. I think you can question his ability to manage kids based on this. But I think coaching guys in the NFL, if I'm an NFL owner, I hire him.
Do you think he survives?
Not at Ohio State, but okay. I do think he's an NFL head coach.
Only if he has text messages or some kind of documented proof that he did handle it appropriately by Title IX standards. If not, he won't.
What if he comes out and gives a mea culpa? Says, look, I should have handled this better. I think I can handle it better forward.
Moving his resignation.
If he did not handle it appropriately by Title IX, they won't have that chance for him. His text messages, his emails, and what he did, that's going to tell the story. And I don't think it's a four-week investigation.
Well, an interesting thing.
I think it's shorter because I think they have to go through how he responded and how he handled that.
Let's say, for instance, he does find something that covers him. At a minimum, he was unethical in front of the media and lied to them. Now
people get over that really fast.
Fans of Ohio State couldn't care about us. But I'm saying that's not the greatest look in the world either.
The media is going to go to war with Ohio State and Urban Meyer, and I don't think Ohio State wants to be bothered with that.
Welcome back. Eric Mangini's back. We're joined now, NFL Films analyst, my friend Greg Cosell.
Howard Cosell's nephew.
That's right.
That's true.
Love this guy. Yeah. We almost came to blows this summer, though, Colin.
Well, you fight with everybody. Right. You're the Draymond Green of the network.
I saved him. I backed off. I saved him.
Let's move to the National Football League, where the preseason kicks off tonight. Ravens taking on the Bears at the Hall of Fame game in Canton. Now, tonight, we'll get our first glimpse of the much-hyped Lamar Jackson under center. It will also be the first time RG3 takes the field in an NFL game since 2016. Whitlock, who do you think has a better Ravens debut?
RG3, just because of the experience, there's really no pressure. He's completely playing with house money. There are no expectations for RG3. He can just let it loose, let it fly. Lamar Jackson, all eyes are going to be on him. He wants to go out and show how much growth he has. He wants to prove everybody wrong, that he should have been higher drafted. I don't think we'll see anything tonight that will tell us, you know, which one of these guys is going to end up being the backup quarterback. I just think it's going to be easier for RG3 initially. Just he's been there, done that. Lamar Jackson's going to have a lot of pressure on tonight. I don't think it'll go that well.
I call him RJ7 because I've seen so many variations of him at this point. I think Lamar Jackson, I'll just throw this out there. I don't know this to be true. I'll throw it out there. Baltimore spent a first-round pick on him.
They traded up for him.
Don't you think they want to make him succeed?
Well, he's going to be the backup quarterback.
So they're going to make sure people go, hey, that was a good first round pick. That guy can really play. Coaches can call what they want, put the personnel around who they want. I think Baltimore wants to make Joe Flacco aware that he's not a wasted pick, and I think they want to sell him.
Kyle, let me give you I love these analogies. You can set the greatest salad bar in front of me. I'm going to find the hot wings. It doesn't matter. So they can lay it out. They can lay it out for Lamar Jackson. He's got to pull the strings no matter what they call. He's a rookie. This is his first debut. Big expectations.
If it's not RG3, then it's a problem. I mean, the guy's got a ton of experience, and he's not playing with house money. He's playing on borrowed time. If he doesn't go out and perform at a high level during the preseason, this is his last rodeo. So he's got to go and make sure that he performs well. And the odds of him being the backup quarterback, they're not very good. Are they going to keep three? Probably not, but it is a nice audition for some other team. He's got experience. There's no defensive game plan. This is a borderline next practice. It should be about as vanilla as it can get. And it'll also depend on who's playing versus which players, you know, what point in the game, if RG3 is with the frontline group or the second group. But just based on pure experience, it should be RG3.
And they may both look good tonight for the simple reason that quarterbacks who run around and make plays do that in the preseason because no one's game planning. No one's trying to mush rush or spy the quarterback or do anything like that. So Lamar Jackson will probably make some spectacular running plays, as RG3 might, because that's what happens in the preseason, and then people get overly excited about a quarterback's ability to run around.
And I think there's a very good chance RG3 avoids every opportunity to run. He's going to try to throw the football. Again, because of those expectations. We all know he can run. I think he's going to go out there, like he said, and try to show his QB growth. And so he's going to try to throw the football, and it's the NFL. That's a big step up from college football. He doesn't have RG3's experience. My expectations are low for Lamar.
We should be excited if Lamar Jackson goes out there and has no unforced errors.
Correct.
There's no false start penalties. There's no fumbled snaps. Things look clean. He runs the offense well. It doesn't look like he's over-caffeinated as he's going through it because he's so he's so tense about being in that moment. To me, you get that done, that's a win. RG3, he needs to go out and do a little bit more because this time in Baltimore is probably short-lived.
All right, welcome back. Eric Mangini and Greg Cosell are back. Let's move to New England, where Tom Brady will turn 41 tomorrow. And while the quarterback hasn't shown any outward signs of slowing down, Rob Gronkowski actually says that Brady has started to mellow in his old age.
I would say probably back in the day, he was a little bit more on you if you didn't get it right, a little bit more in your face. But I mean, I don't see, he's 40, going on 41 now. I don't feel like he backed off on that a little bit, which is nice. He used to be mean to me. Glad he's not to these young guys anymore.
How was he mean to you?
Just was.
All right, Cal Hurd, is this actually a bad sign for Brady and the Patriots?
You're just trying to find ways.
Yep.
I love Brady. What do you mean? But I just don't like
you this. Love LeBron and Brady. We've never done a positive spin on them. Okay. Let me tell you something. People mellow out. Testosterone levels come down. Everybody mellows out with age. You throw some titles. You throw $1 billion net worth, a supermodel wife. He's got a very great life. He's got kids. This is what everybody does. The CEO at 48 is not the CEO at 68.
I don't know. Belichick and Saban, I don't think have mellowed out a whole lot with age.
I don't know. I saw a video.
That might have gotten harder. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, when I look at Tom, listen, he's got everything. He doesn't even have a challenger on the staff now. Garoppolo's gone. What's he up there to be uptight about?
Listen, I felt the thing that I'm saying here is that Brady has been the assistant coach on the field for Bill Belichick. He's been as intense as Belichick and maybe has been a bit of a hammer for Belichick from time to time where Belichick doesn't have to. And when I hear that he's kind of backed off that in any kind of way this year after the offseason they just went through where they haven't seemed to be getting along and there seems to be a problem since Malcolm Butler, that's kind of a red flag to me. Tom Brady's been the in-your-face quarterback for 15, 16 years. Stay that way.
I would imagine he'll be that way when the time comes.
And so we're using Rob Gronkowski as a gauge of emotional intelligence development. That's the first part. He said that Tom used to be mean to him. I'm sure he did, because I bet you he didn't get a lot wrong or didn't get a lot right. And then the other thing, it's the first week.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the first week. When you come back from vacation, everybody's relaxed, it's nice, you see old friends, you start with the install, you kind of build up now, especially because training camps change so much. Give it about a week and a half where you're tired of sitting in meetings with guys, you're getting frustrated, you're getting ridden by the coaches. That edge will come back pretty quickly. This is the post-vacation ease into training camp mode.
Listen, Mick Jagger used to trash hotel rooms. Now he takes naps.
That's because he's old and washed up. Tom Brady was the MVP of the league last year. Tom Brady has a way that he competes that works.
Tom Brady just came off a Super Bowl where he threw for 505 yards.
And he wasn't a nice guy then. And he shouldn't be a nice guy now.
So you think because of what Rob Gronkowski said that we're going to gauge Tom Brady's personality?
The sage, Rob Gronkowski.
Can I say this?
You can say whatever you want.
Rob Gronkowski knows more about Tom Brady than you.
That is correct.
And you and me. He's right there. And he's acknowledging, hey, this seems a little different.
So maybe he was having fun with the media.
Don't you think some of this is, to your point, Gronk came in a little bit of a meathead. He's less of a meathead. Tom doesn't write him because Gronk, there's symmetry between those.
And does Gronk knows more than I do about the history of Tom Brady? I was there when it started. I was there for the first 6 years.
That wasn't my point.
No, but I'm just saying, like, the whole coach on the field, in your face type thing, Tom's never been an in your face type guy. He's a very demanding, he demands excellence from the people around him. You won't get the ball if you're in the wrong spot. He may call you out if you do the wrong thing. But in terms of, like, jumping on you and
he did Josh McDaniels, got
you
in
know,
his face.
One time right. in 18 years, I mean, it's an aberration.
Yeah, I mean, Tom's not a barker.
Rob Gronkowski just said, just to be clear, when he said, he wasn't talking about Tom yelling at him. He's like, Tom's not yelling at the young guys like Gronkowski expected. Because that's how, when I was a young guy, I got yelled at by Tom
Brady.
Well,
let me ask you a question. What? Given that they have an entire new receiving core, okay, that a whole
that's
new
when you
group.
Need to be yelling
that,
the most.
No, you could take the opposite approach, that you need to sort of teach them and ease them in, and so they understand all the subtleties and the nuances of the pass game, which, as Eric knows, there's a lot to learn there. And there's a lot of movement. There's a lot of after-the-snap understanding. So maybe he's taking the approach that I need to bring these guys along, that yelling at them or getting on them the first couple of days is not going to benefit them.
And maybe he's got to learn their names.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of new faces.
I mean, they just signed Eric Decker.
Figure out who's there.
Look, I don't want to compare Tom to the name I'm about to say. This would be like coming into a preseason college basketball and, you know, hey, Bob Knight's not yelling anymore. And Eric goes, well, it's not a big deal. Well, Bob Knight yells. That's what he does.
Yeah, but Bob Knight's defined by violent anger. Like,
right.
he's just volume and... That's not what Tom Brady's defined by. He's defined by work ethic and detail.
And being demanding, which is the better word, as Eric said.
You know what? Michael Jordan reported to training camp and was giving everybody Rolex watches and taking them all out to eat. And he wasn't punching any teammates anymore. He wasn't up people's rear end like he used to be. And somebody said that. I'd be like, well, hold on. Jordan's changed. Because Tom Brady and Jordan have an edge to them, and that's what I think Gronkowski's saying.
It's the first week. It's the first week.
Jordan got into the Hall of Fame and still had the edge.
Let people get a little overtired. Let that heat build up. It's the first week back.
If
not too bad.
The Texans in week one by 14 at half, you'll see the end. All right, to Kansas City, where the Chiefs have handed the reins over to Patrick Mahomes this year. Interesting. It isn't going well so far. He's got 7 picks and 6 practices, even calling the wrong plays in the huddle at one point. This is an interesting story to me. Are you worried at all about a very good roster, a very good coach? You worried about this kid?
I don't want to overreact to 7 picks and 6 practices or whatever. I hope that the defense is making some plays. I'm a Chiefs fan. However, I've said this from day one. I'm not sold on Patrick Mahomes. I'm not sold on he's the next Brett Favre. Because I'm not sold that in this era, you actually want the next Brett Favre in terms of look, you'll always take a Brett Favre whenever you can get him. But the league has changed. It's not an interception league anymore. The guys that throw 7 to 8 interceptions a year, that's your great quarterback. This guy is a risk taker. He's going to turn the ball over through the air. He's going to bot some plays mentally. He's going to be completely different than what you saw from Alex Smith. And I'm just not sure if that's the right route. I've never been sold on Patrick Mahomes. Great raw talent. I'm just not sold.
Well, Chris Carter, the Hall of Fame receiver, our teammate, always says, you know, some things are almost biblical. Like if you have a great voice, you'll sing in the car, you'll sing in the shower, you'll just sing.
Well, you do that even if you have a bad voice.
That is true.
Patrick Mahomes has a cannon. So does Cam, Jay Cutler, Jeff George. When you have a cannon, Terry Bradshaw, Namath, you try to squeeze the ball in. It is now, to your point, it's kind of a precision league. Nobody threw 36 touchdowns, 4 picks. Brady, Aaron Rodgers, guys do that now. I always worry when I hear, oh, my, that's the best arm in the league. Well, if you have the best voice, you sing. And if you have the biggest arm, you're going to try to wedge it into tight spots.
You have the best legs, you're going to run.
And I do worry about that he is so gifted with his arm, he'll take big risks.
I love that you won't overreact to the 7 picks, but you will overreact to Brady
and
being quiet. Being quiet in
Brady's got a long resume. Patrick Mahomes is brand new, but go ahead.
Well, so
I'm a Chiefs fan, too, by the way.
So I think it is going to look very different than what we had with Alex Smith. Alex Smith is like a blue-chip stock, and now they went and they bought a tech stock, and they're hoping that tech stock is going to somehow propel them past what they see as the barrier. But there is a lot of risk here. He's still a very young quarterback,
yes.
And he's got it. You've heard him talk about the process, the learning process. That's real. That's real. He's the starter for the first time on a consistent basis, and he's got a lot more pressure now than he did before. It's radically different than Alex Smith. In terms of an interception league, Garoppolo, you and I talked about this last year. He threw 7 touchdowns and 5 picks. Those numbers aren't very good if you project them out over 16 games. But again, they liked the upside. They rewarded him pretty handsomely.
Well, Mahomes, you have to look at his college career, too. He was a loose, reckless, undisciplined player. The talent was obviously there. He throws a ball as easily and as well as anybody we've seen recently coming out of college. But there's a looseness to his game. And that has to be, you have to decide as a coaching staff, and Eric can certainly speak to this, how you want to handle that. Because you can't live in the NFL on out of structure, off schedule, random plays. There has to be a precision to the way you play the position. That's what Patrick Mahomes has to learn. And that doesn't happen in one training camp as the starter.
I think that they took Alex Smith for granted, one. And they loved Alex Smith, but I think they took him for granted. And then, two, I think, and Andy Reid's a tremendous head coach.
Yeah.
But he hasn't won a Super Bowl. And so what that makes you a little bit more desperate. That loose quarterback you see at Texas Tech, you know what? I can get Brett Favre out. I can get a better Brett Favre out of him or something. And so I think Andy Reid is taking a huge risk here trying to get over this Super Bowl hump. And I think there's a good chance this could all blow up in their face. And this kid can be loose with the football, and this team end up 8-8, 9-7.
Well, if you look, it's really interesting in the AFC. You've got these veterans. You've got Big Ben, and you've got Tom Brady, and you have Phillip Rivers. But then there are a lot of young guns. I don't know what Deshaun Watson really is. Andrew Luck, I almost call a veteran now. I think he's going to become, you know, I think Kansas City, of every team in the league, is the enigma. We all like their roster.
Their
we all like
their defense wasn't as good last year as a lot of people might think. They have good players, but they didn't execute really well.
I have no idea what they are.
Marcus Peters.
I think they can coach their way to success, but they're the one team in the league. I have to watch them for September. I don't know what this kid is. I really don't.
And he's got incredible upside. He does. He makes those wild plays, but you've got some serious risks there because he doesn't know how to control that cannon. And Alex Smith was so good at managing everything offensively. This is radically different.
Welcome back. Joined now by NBA champ Eddie House and the founder of the Big Lead, Jason McIntyre, who moved out here into a big house because he's got such a great job. Kevin Durant has taken some flack recently for his constant battles with fans on social media. I feel like there's a story every other day with him. But according to our good friend Chris Broussard, Durant is just being himself.
On the court, I thought up to a few months ago that he's acting out of himself. Like, the guy we saw in Oklahoma City was not, you know, cursing all the time, was not on the court being as aggressive, you know, in terms of arguing and maybe fighting with guys or getting, you know, technicals with referees and things like that. Durant texted me and said, you know, the guy you see now,
that's
is
the real me.
Guy is the real me. The guy in Oklahoma City was the phony. I was just trying to please everybody and do, you know, what I thought everybody wanted me to do. The guy I am now in Golden State, that's the real me.
What do you make of that?
Chris had some very interesting things to say. We didn't get to run at all, but he talked about that Kevin Durant's kind of a spiritual guy and a religious guy. And he Chris said that he's talked to KD, and KD is a little bit off of that. And so I just see a guy that went from OKC, the Bible Belt, to Silicon Valley, the headquarters of the secular world. And I just think he's more secular. And I think that he feels like he has to be more of a bad guy. I think he's convinced himself he's got to be more of a bad guy to be a champion. He's trying to be more like a Michael Jordan or other people. He doesn't feel like he can be the nice guy and win. He feels like he tried that in OKC. I think eventually he'll figure out that, you know, being the bad guy and having that edge just isn't as important. And then I also think there may have been a little slight shot at Russell Westbrook. Couldn't be myself there, can be here.
Yeah, I don't sense the Westbrook thing, and you know I love a good shot at Westbrook.
Anytime you could get one.
Listen, it's new me. I'm coming around. I kind of think Kevin Durant's doing something which is dangerous, which is self-analyzing. We all change. And you start to analyze, and why do I do... Well, you were young, and then you were 20s, and now you're getting to 30, and we all change. And I think it's very dangerous to sit back and constantly, why did I do this and why did I do this? Let a therapist do it. You're not an expert, okay? He's overanalyzing things. In Oklahoma City, there'd been a lot of movement. D.C., Texas, Seattle, Oklahoma City, and a lot was thrust on him. You're the second best player in the world. That's a lot for any young man. He handled it how in the moment he thought was right. Now he's an established superstar. Now he goes, and after LeBron, even sometimes over LeBron, he's a player of the league. This is a natural progression of a young human being that goes from college kid to moneyed to wealthy to an icon.
To curse it in everyone's face. I don't know if that's natural.
I totally agree with you in the maturation point as a person. He was 19 when he got drafted by the Sonics. He's 27 when he went to Golden State. I'm not the same person I was 2 weeks. I'm constantly trying to update myself to be the better version of me all the time. So it took him a while to figure out exactly who he was in this league. And when you don't have a ring, those are the whispers that he was hearing. Those were the demons that he was hearing when he was by himself. So you can't talk. These guys over here got 2 rings, D-Wade, LeBron, they having a conversation. You can't be in this conversation. You don't know what it's like to be a champ. You know, you're not a champ yet. So once he got that validation, got that monkey off his back, now it's like, well, I'm letting him hang now. This is who I really am, and there is nothing that nobody can say to stop it. He's feeling himself, and I think that's part of it that's driving him as well, is the fact that he's chasing to be the best player. Like, everybody thinks LeBron's chasing Jordan. KD is chasing LeBron right now to try to show that he's the best player in the league as well, or he's 1A right now.
Yeah, I don't think it's a shot at Westbrook. I would agree with the LeBron stuff. When you look at the parallels, it's pretty fascinating, all right? Kevin Durant came into the league, was pretty quiet in OKC. Media went after him. He's Mr. Unreliable. Whose team is it, him or Westbrook? Think about LeBron when he was in Cleveland that first stretch, guys. Okay, LeBron fell in line. He's like, I could use some help, but he wasn't the king. He wasn't moving chess pieces around the board. LeBron goes to Miami. He's the king. He's like, give me Wade. Give me Bosh. I want this guy. Kevin Durant says, I'm going to follow LeBron's path. I turned 27. I want to go to Golden State. LeBron went to Miami at 26. So I just think Kevin Durant is kind of following the LeBron strategy of, I'm going to take control of my path. Now, LeBron didn't go online and bash people. But Kevin Durant, that's where he is.
Couldn't I argue, Jason? I guess my point's this. I wasn't real clear. Kevin Durant was the real Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City. That's who he was, insecure. Now he's wealthy and titled. This is who he is now.
Okay, but my only point is the discussion we're having and the things that people are reacting to are about his bickering back and forth with random fans, getting a bunch of technicals in NBA games, cussing at people, just being a bit more of an a-hole. And I don't know if that's great evolution. That may be who he is right now, but he may look up and do so. I believe in self-evaluation, and just I think he should be questioning himself, is that really an improvement, some of these things that he's doing? Can he be a great player while still being a gentleman on the court and more consistent with the values instilled in him from his mother and that guy he was in OKC? I think potentially he can be. I think I agree with Charles Barkley and others. It's like, I just don't think this character he's become now matches who he really is. But again, he's done nothing so
bad. So you think you actually think the old him was the real him and this is the fake?
In terms of the in-your-face and bickering with fans and all that, I think he's caught up in Twitter. I think people get caught. Twitter is a poison and a virus, and it's been set off in too many athletes. And I think at some point when he gets old, he'll realize, man, what the hell was I doing arguing? Legitimate arguments with people over Twitter. It's a waste of my time. It's a waste of my energy. Why give those people that energy?
I think he looked back at himself and self-evaluated and was like, you know what? I let a lot of things slide that I wanted to say. I wanted to get back at this dude. I wanted to say this, but at the time, he didn't have, I don't think he had the bravado at that time. I don't think he had the mindset to go after his. He seems to have a little bit of thin skin, right? So I think as growing up and getting more money, so the skin started getting a little thicker. You know, his confidence got a little stronger. He's won 2 final MVPs. So now he's clapping back at everybody. You got something to say? I got something to say too.
All right, to another warrior in the news these days, Draymond Green, with reports surfacing that Tristan Thompson punched him in the face at an LA nightclub after the ESPYs last month. The story actually got some Cleveland fans to organize a parade in Tristan's honor, but Draymond took to Instagram to say the story isn't true, saying, quote, I've enjoyed y'all's stories and talk shows over the last couple of days. Them joints inaccurate, though, G. All right, carry on, my people. They may want to cancel that parade, too. Then he added, nah, keep the parade. That city won't have any for a while. I forgot LeBron left. Cowherd, Draymond just need to let this go?
Well, I mean, he's part of a dynasty. It feels like below a dynasty standard. But I do think he is, I've always felt he's the bouncer to this nightclub. The Warriors
he just
are.
He bounced.
Well, he is the edge. He's the tough guy in a skinny jeans suburban team. And so I think he's playing his role. He's the talker. He's the chatty guy. He goes to nightclubs, gets into, you know.
Studio gangster.
A little bit, but I think this is who he is. Listen, Rodman was doing a lot of this stuff before Twitter with the Bulls dynasty.
But look, I think he needs to leave it alone because he looks like a studio gangster here. Tristan Thompson came for him, and this isn't much of a denial. The story inaccurate, though. No, Tristan challenged you. And you backed off, and you're not the tough guy. You're better off beating up college kids in East Lansing than taking on your peers.
Well, that right there is why he should let this go, because you know what? He was arrested 2 summers ago for that. Mm-hmm. What happens if the NBA says, wait a sec, what's going on here? Tristan Thompson, Draymond, we've got two, you know, good NBA players fighting. Let's investigate this. Then what happens if the NBA opens an investigation and looks into it? And
you're thinking of the NFL.
No, the NBA could certainly do this. They could look into it and say, wait a sec, we got a guy who is on commercials, he's got a sneaker deal, he's making a lot of money, and he's now been in fights in 2 of the last 3 summers? That's not a great look for our league. I'm just saying, Draymond doesn't let it go, the NBA could look into it.
Well, I think you should let it go for this reason. It's not any good publicity for him or for the NBA at all. It's kind of like a little ding on such a really good offseason that they had with Summer League and free agency going on. I think this is kind of a ding to what's been going on. They're trying to compete with the NFL, being a year-round organization or a year-round league to where everybody's paying attention to them year-round. You can't have these kind of issues come up if you're going to keep competing with the NFL. But I see his plight if it is inaccurate. I don't have all the details. So if he didn't get beat up, I could see him say, hey, man, get your facts together to try to make sure, hey, they saying I got beat up, but I really didn't get whooped. Nothing really happened. It was a scuffle, like some pushing, but I didn't get 2 pieces. So if he's trying to get that out there to try to validate himself and say, hey, I didn't get beat up, you know what I mean? All these reports are wrong. I could see that side of it, but just let it go.
I'll say this. This Instagram post does not bother me. because it's real. He didn't call some press conference. He didn't do some interview with some reporter and go all off into detail. I think this is the end of it. To me, he's basically acknowledging something happened. He's basically politely saying, I didn't get beat up, and y'all exaggerating what happened. But at the end of the day, Tristan Thompson called his bluff, and Tristan's the winner here, and Draymond's, you know, letting it go.
Does it impact that was comical, the bouncer though. When he goes out to the court next season?
Nah.
And what are the other teams going to say? You're not so tough, huh?
Nah.
Well, yeah, you got knocked down by Tristan.
Well, you know for a fact they're not going to fight, so in between the lines, he is tough.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to try to stop him from playing his game.
You can't say that then anymore. I'll meet him in the streets.
On the court, nobody thinks he's soft.
Yeah,
not on the court. He's done too much damage on the court.
Right.
He ain't scared.
I don't think nobody's going to attack him.
All right, welcome back. Time for Last Call. Let's move to Tiger Woods, who shot a 4-under at the Bridgestone Invitational today, but actually made bigger news with a report that he's set to face off in a head-to-head showdown with Phil Mickelson over Thanksgiving weekend for a reported $10 million. Cowherd, will you watch this?
Oh, yeah, I love stuff like this.
Thanksgiving, all that football, and you're going to watch two old washed-up guys.
Washed up! Every time Tiger gets a birdie, you go crazy.
I love Tiger, but he's washed up.
Oh, I'll watch this.
Phil Mickelson's extra washed up. I have no interest in this. This is 10 years ago, I would have had an interest.
Why do they put it on Thanksgiving?
Because they want to be buried by football, the greatest sport ever invented.
It's Thanksgiving weekend.
And college football, I don't get it.
I don't know. I like events like this. I do like events like this.
So another guy past his prime, Kobe Bryant, whose wife Vanessa just shot down the rumors started by Shaq that Kobe was contemplating an NBA comeback. Cowherd, should Kobe come back and chase a ring with LeBron James? He'd just be...
Oh, you don't believe this story.
What do you mean? I planted the story with Shaq.
I saw Kobe last week. He looked like a dad. He had a little meat on the bones finally.
He can come back and ride LeBron's coattails. Everybody else is. Why not Kobe?